Hey there, welcome to another edition of the LiveWire House Party. I'm Luke Burbank. We are going to be talking about hidden talents this week with David Duchovny, you know, from The X-Files, who is also, it turns out, a best-selling novelist. He's going to talk about his new book and also whether or not Agent Mulder would have been into QAnon. We're also going to be talking to two of the most talented jump ropers in America, Nick and Kaylee Woodard, and maybe even testing out our own skills with a little virtual sesh. And finally, we're going to meet a new singer-songwriter whose talent is not going to be hidden for long, since she was just written up in the New York Times and Rolling Stone. Jensen McRae will swing by for a chat and a song. This is going to be one of those parties that you do not want to miss. So stick around, because it all gets started right after this. This episode of LiveWire is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you can call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law. Hey, Elena.
Hey, Luke. How's it going?
It's going well. Very excited as we move into the new year. I think this is going to be a good one.
Yeah. 22 is two 11s, and 11 is my lucky number, so I am stoked.
It's double lucky for you.
That's
okay,
right.
Well, maybe that's going to extend into this round of station location identification examination. This is where I'm asking you about a place in the U.S. where we are on the radio. You try to guess where I'm talking about. This city is nicknamed the first city on the Mississippi and is also the self-proclaimed curling capital of the U.S.
Somewhere in Minnesota.
Okay, yes, you're in the right state.
Mm-hmm.
The story is it's also the alleged birthplace of Paul Bunyan.
Brainerd, Minnesota.
Oh, you're in the right direction. We are talking about Bemidji.
That's the birthplace of Paul Bunyan.
It sure is. Where folks are listening to us on KNBJ in beautiful, and this time of year, I assume, frozen Bemidji, Minnesota.
They had a white Christmas, I'd wager.
Yeah, they did. They may have had a white Thanksgiving. You never know.
White Halloween.
All right, shout out to Bemidji and everybody else tuning in. Well, speaking of our radio show, should we go for it, Elena?
Let's do it.
All right, take it away.
From PRX, it's LiveWire. This week, actor and writer David Duchovny.
Instead of me trying to give a soundbite about what I feel about what's going on, I want to write a book about America.
Jump roping champions Nick and Kaylee Woodard.
You know, can you perfect your routine in a minute and 15 seconds? And that's really what determines if you're going to be a champion or not.
With music from Jensen McRae. I'm your announcer, Elena Passarello, and now the host of LiveWire, Luke Burbank. Yeah!
Hey, thank you so much, Elena Passarello. Thanks, everyone, for tuning in from all over the country. Happy New Year. We have a very fun episode of LiveWire in store for you this week. We recorded this in February of last year, and we asked the listeners a question. We asked them, as we tend to do, what's your hidden talent? And we're going to be hearing those answers coming up in just a little bit. First, though, we got to kick things off with the best news we heard all week. This, of course, is our little reminder at the top of the show that there is good news happening out there in the world. And even though it is the New Year's weekend and everyone's enjoying some time off, the best news rests for no one, Elena. Here we are talking about the best news that we heard all week. What's the best news you heard?
Well, this best news connects with my New Year's resolution, which is to make friends with a crow. My resolution last year was set reasonable goals. So hopefully this one will be a little better.
So what happened in the world of crows that has you feeling optimistic about your resolution?
This is a crow or maybe a raven. We don't know for sure. Down in Grants Pass, Oregon, at an elementary school recently called Allendale Elementary, a bunch of students noticed the same crow kind of flying past their windows and pecking at the doors. And I guess at some point it just flew in and started hanging out with the fifth grade class, stole a couple of snacks from the snack table. And he kept on coming back, this crow. And he would say things to the students and teachers like, "What's up?" and "I'm fine." And apparently he also knew his fair share of swear words. And eventually they figured out what the story was. This is a rescued crow from, I'm assuming, it's tough to tell in the news story, but it sounds like maybe he's from a couple towns over from Grants Pass. A woman named Janelle Shattuck had been kind of keeping him on her property for a couple of years. She named him Cosmo, and Cosmo liked harassing the dog, Tonka Truck, and kind of lived his life, but was very like bonded with Janelle. And then she went away for Thanksgiving break, and he went to a neighbor's house a couple of doors down and started trying to become friendly with them, and they were not as responsive. And so they took him to an animal shelter. And then the animal shelter decided he was just a wild crow, and they released him. And so then he was out, and he had no idea where he was. So eventually, as he was looking around trying to find his old pal Janelle, he found this elementary school and was like, "Well, I'm just going to hang out here until somebody can find me." And one of those fifth grade kids has a dad who had seen the post on Facebook that Cosmo was missing, and they put two and two and two and two and two and two together.
So Cosmo has now been reunited?
Yep. Janelle showed up at the elementary school, and she said it took 45 minutes of plying him with sardines, but she finally got him calm enough so she could grab him. And now they're reunited. Tonka Truck is probably in the mix, so it's a happy ending.
That is good news. My best news I heard all week also involves school, a high school in Michigan, Notre Dame Preparatory in Pontiac, Michigan. So the freshman basketball team was getting ready for their season to start. And the head coach said, and this is a big thing, I played team sports as a kid, the coaches want the team to be bonded and to be a unit. And so the head coach said, "I want you to start a text chain of all the players so you can talk about practice and getting rides to things and, you know, various basketball team related stuff. But I want you to be in charge of it. You're the players. This is your team. I want you to take some initiative." So they did. They punched in all these phone numbers, and I think it was like there was 14 kids on the team. So okay, the first 13 numbers they put into the text chain are fine. The 14th number, somebody enters it in one digit off. And suddenly there's a random person on the text chain. So they're texting about Notre Dame prep basketball. And this person comes on and says, "Did y'all mean to add me to this?" And they said, "Yeah," because they're thinking it's like their teammate, Tim, or whatever. And so this person said, "Do you actually know who I am?" And they're like, "Yeah, you're Tim." He's like, "No. I'm actually a guy named Sean Murphy Bunting. I'm a cornerback for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, the reigning Super Bowl champs." And the kids on this freshman team are like, "Stop messing with us, Tim." So this player for the Bucs, whose number has accidentally ended up on this text chain, says, "No, I really play in the NFL." So he's FaceTiming with the team to prove that he's in the locker room.
They don't believe
of
him
the
at
Tampa
all.
Bucs. So they start to believe him when they see him on FaceTime at his locker. He's like, "I'm really this guy." And so they're like, "Well, who's with you?" So he's handing the phone around to other Tampa Bay Buccaneers, who, if you're a sports person, you'll know these names. Rob Gronkowski.
Gronk!
Right? Mike Evans, Richard Sherman, Leonard Fournette, who's a running back. He gets the phone for a while. And so then, you know, imagine this. Just these, and I've seen now pictures of these. Freshman basketball players are very young,
the
Elena.
Little, yeah, the tiny.
They're so, these guys are so young, and they are freaking out on this, like, FaceTime Zoom-ish thing they're on. So at some point, they get greedy, and they say, "We want to talk to Tom Brady, please." Except Tom Brady is in a meeting. And so the people who are passing the phone out of the locker room are like, yeah, of course, everybody wants to talk to Tom Brady. He's a busy guy. He's in a meeting. Sorry. Well, they apparently just like stall Leonard Fournette for like 15
Leonard
minutes.
Leonard Fournette.
And so enough time goes by that I guess Tom Brady is like out of his meeting and he like pokes his head onto the screen. Now, Tom Brady went to Michigan and played football at the University of Michigan.
Oh.
So these players were in Michigan, so there was a little bit of crossover.
Okay.
Some people were speculating that's why he interrupted his busy day to be a part of this little, you know, phone call situation. So they actually got to talk to Tom Brady. And as you would imagine, they are just absolutely losing it. So this whole thing, for me, constitutes the best news that I heard this week. Let's get our first guests here onto the house party. They have turned what might be considered to be sort of a hidden talent into their actual careers, which has included winning world championships and traveling the world and performing with Cirque du Soleil. Their talent, Elena, is jump roping.
Woo!
Which is actually, if you think about it, kind of like the perfect exercise during the pandemic. I mean, no one can even get that near you when you're jumping rope.
Mm-hmm. Cone of safety.
You do. You have like a force field around you called the rope. They've been teaching jump rope online during the pandemic. Please welcome Nick and Kaylee Woodard to the LiveWire house party.
Thanks for having us.
We're excited to be here.
Watching your videos, I was really struck by how much choreography there is. There's a really strong dance element and a really strong gymnastics element. You're doing flips. You're landing in a splits position. I mean, the physicality of this really can't sort of be over-described. What's the kind of most important thing about becoming a world champion? Is it that you really have the choreography down? Is it that the rope doesn't hit your leg? Like, what's the biggest element of what makes you both world champions?
Sure. So, I mean, I think the biggest thing is the choreography element to it. So whenever we are performing, we have music that we do our best to choreograph, like some of our big tricks too. And then of course it's also like that we don't miss. So when you get out there, you have one opportunity to knock it out. And so when we go out there to compete, you know, we've trained all year to get our bodies ready, get our minds ready. And then on that one moment, you know, can you perfect your routine in a minute and 15 seconds? And that's really what determines if you're going to be a champion or not with some of the routines that we do.
Now, the way that we actually heard about you, Nick and Kaylee, is because our executive director, Heather, and her kids, I think, are doing online jump rope classes with you. This is something that, like everybody in the pandemic, you've sort of pivoted. How does that work? And what's that like teaching jump rope, you know, over Zoom?
Yeah, I mean, like you say, everybody had to pivot, and that was us. When March hit and everything shut down, it was crazy. So now we're offering virtual kids classes. We're offering virtual classes for some of the jump rope athletes who've already been in it for a while, so those intermediate and those advanced skills. And then we're even doing virtual adult fitness classes as well, where we're teaching the adults some skills, but then we're also giving them a great bodyweight workout at the end of it as well. So it's been a great transition for us. You know, it's something that, I mean, we can truly take our computers and do it anywhere. Now we're able to interact with kids in Indiana and Washington.
Even Russia on one of the last ones.
Yeah, Russia. Oh, wow. I mean, we have them from all over the place who wouldn't regularly have this opportunity. And so even after the pandemic, we're not going to let go of this virtual side. Mm-hmm. We're going to keep things rolling there and try to make this another part of our business.
We're talking to Nick and Kaylee Woodard here on the LiveWire house party. They are world champion jump ropers and teach jump rope over the internet during the pandemic. Do you feel like jump rope gets a bad rap? Like either people think of it as like a punishment, like it's too hard or like it's for kids.
Yes, I think that the biggest thing I've heard from adults that are looking at jump rope from a fitness angle is like, oh, I can't jump rope. I have bad knees, or I can't jump rope. I just, you know, I could never take that really, really high impact activity. Mm. But the cool thing is, if you can jog very slowly, you're probably putting about the same amount of pressure on your joints than you are if you're just doing the basics of jump rope. It's really not that high impact. And so that's the biggest quote, bad rap that I've heard. And then the other thing from a sport perspective, we always hear that jump rope is not a sport. And that is just simply not true.
Do you name the jump ropes? Do you have like old doesn't hit me in the foot? Like, what are the names for these ropes?
Now I'm going to start doing that.
Right?
That's not the slickest name, but I mean, do you have like a favorite rope and does it have a name?
Yeah, so I have a favorite rope. I enjoy using beaded ropes, but I never gave it a name, but I think I should start now.
Yeah, I'm for sure starting.
We have to take a short break, but I guess the plan is when we come back, you both, Kaylee and Nick, are going to try to teach me how to do like a jump rope trick.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Well, we'll see what happens. Okay. We'll take a quick break here on the Live Wire House Party, and then we'll be back with my imminent death.
Vacations, weddings, birthdays, and reunions. Oh, my. There's so much going on. Get the most out of your spring plans by stocking up on pre-alcohol now. ZBiotics Pre-Alcohol Probiotic Drink is the world's first genetically engineered probiotic. It was invented by PhD scientists to tackle rough mornings after drinking. Here's how it works. When you drink, alcohol gets converted into a toxic byproduct in the gut. It's this byproduct, not dehydration, that's to blame for your rough next day. ZBiotics produces an enzyme to break this byproduct down. Just remember to make ZBiotics your first drink of the night, drink responsibly, and you'll feel your best tomorrow. Go to zbiotics.com/livewire to get 15% off your first order when you use LiveWire at checkout. ZBiotics is backed with 100% money-back guarantee, so if you're unsatisfied for any reason, they'll refund your money, no questions asked. Remember to head to zbiotics.com/livewire and use the code LiveWire at checkout for 15% off. Thank you to ZBiotics for sponsoring this episode and our good times.
Welcome back to the Live Wire House Party from PRX. I'm Luke Burbank at my house. Elena Passarello is at her place. And we have Nick and Kaylee Woodard joining us virtually. They are world champion jump rope athletes. They run online classes during the pandemic. And for some reason, we thought it would be a good idea to have them try to teach me some jump rope skills. I want to say, too, a poor craftsman always blames their tools. But Nick and Kaylee, the jump rope that I'm using was brought over here today and dropped off by our executive director, Heather DeMichelle. This is her jump rope, I believe. It's for a person who's about 5'2".
It looks like a belt.
I'm about 6'1". It also is very light and flimsy. Not like the kind of heavy professional level ones you're using. So sure. I want to just put all of that out there at the start if this doesn't go particularly well, okay?
You're going to do great. I'm excited for it.
Sounds great to me.
So how do we start this whole thing?
Let's just see. Okay. Let's just see you take like four jumps in a row first. Okay. With that baby little rope
right.
You got.
I'm here in the middle of my little office. I'm going to do four jumps with this tiny jump rope, which I can't overstate. I have to hold the edge of the handle to try to add a little length, okay? I'm making every excuse I can before we do this. So four jumps, okay?
Yes.
Four
One,
jumps.
Two, three, four.
Easy.
Oh, you got that.
Nick, okay, so what's next?
All right, so the next one's going to be our rotational skill. It's called a 180. So put the rope in front of your body.
Okay, the rope is in front of my body.
All right, so what you're going to do, put your left leg back.
Okay, left leg is back.
Yep, just like that. Now what you're going to do is you're going to drag the rope down towards your left leg and you're going to rotate your body backwards. And okay. Then once you get halfway around, you're going to pick the rope up and jump backwards.
Oh my goodness. This is terrible radio, but I'm getting a workout, so that's the good news. Okay, so like this and like this.
Yay!
Hey!
That was
Let's
it.
Just tell we all the radio it. Listeners that I nailed that. Okay, what's the last thing?
So, okay, last thing's a push-up.
So oh, no.
Get your mind right. We're so excited. And it's kind of more like a burpee, actually.
Oh, no.
Oh, great. Okay.
Jump rope burpee.
I know. So really getting a workout now. Okay. So rope behind you.
Okay. Rope behind me.
Yeah. There you go. Okay. Now, first step, all at the same time, you're going to turn the rope over your head and squat down to the floor. So
okay,
rope
like
over your
this.
Head and squat down. Yep. Now, while you're down there, you want to kind of put your hands out in front of your feet and make sure that the rope makes a U on the ground in front of you.
I got
yes,
it.
Yes,
okay.
Like that.
Got it, like that.
Perfect. Now, hands on the ground on top of your handles.
Okay.
Okay, we're looking good. Now shoot those feet out into a push-up.
Whoa!
Nice. Okay. Now squat your feet back, almost like you're landing a burpee. Yep.
Okay.
Now, at the same time, you're going to drag the rope towards your feet and then hop over it.
Okay.
Up. Yes.
That's it.
And then you just keep jumping.
Okay, let me try to do that at like half speed.
Okay, let's go.
Okay, so here we go. Down, rope over, push up, up, jump over the rope.
Nice.
You have to keep holding on to the jump rope while you do the push up. That seems so difficult.
Mm-hmm.
Elena, it was difficult.
I'm sweating all the way over here.
Well, I thought I couldn't respect your jump roping skills more, Nick and Kaylee, but having just tried probably the easiest trick in your arsenal and almost not surviving it, I have to say I have even more respect for your amazing skills. We have to stop now because I can't breathe anymore. But thank you so much for being on the Live Wire House Party.
Thanks for having us. We really appreciate it.
So fun.
That was Nick and Kaylee Woodard. Right here on Live Wire, you can check out their virtual jump roping classes for kids and adults over at learningtheropes.com. Also, if you want to see a video of me getting some virtual jump roping lessons, head on over to the LiveWire social media pages. I don't know why I agreed to that. It's not flattering. Hey, special thanks this episode to Ed and Ann Galen of Portland, Oregon. Ed and Ann are part of the LiveWire member community, and they are generously supporting the show with a donation each month, which we are so thankful for because it's how we are able to keep doing the show. So thanks, Ed and Ann, for keeping LiveWire going. This is the LiveWire House Party. I'm Luke Burbank here with Elena Passarello. We like to ask the LiveWire audience a question each week and get their responses. This week we asked, what's your hidden talent? And folks sent those responses in. Elena has been collecting them up. What are the listeners saying are some of their hidden talents?
I love this one from Jamie. Making doggy costumes.
Do they elaborate on it at all?
Yes, it says making doggy costumes in addition to other general sewing. Is that what you're looking for?
Well, I wanted a description of some of these outfits.
Yeah,
what I was really hoping for.
No,
some photos or something.
Left to the imagination. I love doggy dancing, you know, where you do choreographed dancing with your dog. It's like a whole industry.
Uh-huh.
And always the dogs have on amazing costumes. Like there's this one like where they're dressed up as the characters from Grease, the dog and the human.
Is the dog Sandy or is the dog John Travolta character?
Danny Zuko. Yeah. Danny Zuko.
What are some more hidden talents amongst the LiveWire listeners?
How about this one from Chris? Chris's hidden talent, quote, much to my wife's dismay, I can detect and then read in their entirety every historical plaque wherever I am.
So Chris senses there is a plaque somewhere, mm-hmm. and then Chris goes to it and then stares at it and then reads it line mm-hmm. by line.
There really are two kinds of tourists, you know. They're the kinds who just kind of wander through a thing, and then the ones who stop at every kind of marker or reference and soak in all of the information. And I would assume that you, Mr. Burbank, are the former.
You know what? I have been the former mm-hmm. for most of my life. But a couple of years ago, and this just might be moving into middle age, I started stopping at those things. And I was just in Bend, Oregon, and I was reading about how Bend, Oregon used to have the biggest 4th of July festival in all of Oregon, and it hit its high point in the 1940s. Mm. And they had boxing, and they had a pet pageant. There was a giant swan floating around on the Deschutes River. This is all stuff I learned from reading a plaque in Bend, Oregon.
There you go.
Yeah.
Who says plaque is bad for you?
All right. What's another talent that's sort of hidden for one of our listeners?
How about this one from Danielle? Danielle says, I can twirl fire, but it gets better. It wasn't until recently that I learned my grandma was a fire eater. Fire performance runs in my blood.
And gasoline, apparently, depending. Wow. I mean, what an odd little quirk of serendipity?
Yeah.
Coincidence?
It's hidden in her genetic makeup, that talent.
I mean, I don't know if she's saying that she eats the fire too or just twirls it, but all of it is a little scary to me. I'm glad that it's staying mostly within that family.
Okay, let's get our next guest here on the show. He is, of course, the face that launched 1,000 GeoCities pages and crushes. And for good reason.
Oh,
he's
yeah.
won 2 Golden Globes. He spent more than 25 years portraying Fox Mulder on the show and movies, The X-Files. He's also the author of 4 critically acclaimed novels, including his new one, Truly Like Lightning. Let's welcome David Duchovny to the Livewire House Party.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
This new book of yours, Truly Like Lightning, is about extreme Mormonism and land deals and the Rancho Cucamonga educational system.
Everything I'm known for, pretty much.
That's what I was going to say. Not the topics that immediately come to mind when people think of David Duchovny. How did this book come into your mind?
It's been a long process. It goes back to like the year 2000, and I wrote this X-File actually that I directed, and it was based on this forger named Mark Hoffman, and he happened to be a Mormon, and he forged Joseph Smith documents because there are many rumors of Joseph Smith's writings that have been lost. Mm-hmm. So there was there's quite a valuable trade in these kinds of documents, as you can imagine. But what Hoffman did, which mm-hmm. was kind of diabolical and brilliant, was he would forge these documents, but they were scandalous. They were embarrassing to the church. They were fringe beliefs that had been rumored about Joseph Smith, but had never been verified. And he knew that the church would buy these documents from him and then suppress them. So he knew he could have a lucrative business of writing embarrassing documents to the church and that they would buy them and then bury them. So that kind of got me interested in Mormonism.
What about Harold Bloom, this yeah. Yale professor that kind of inspired this book? And yeah. also, you write, inspired you to get into acting, also known as getting out of literature?
Yes, yeah, yeah. It was more of a running away from than a running to anything. But Bloom had spoken of, I think it's his book called Genius. And it's pretty much just a book about everybody who he thought was a genius, you know. And Joseph Smith is one of them. And I was so surprised to learn that. And I wondered what he meant by that, because I'd read Joseph Smith's writings and, you know, he's not a writer. If he's a genius, it's not of literature, right? So Bloom would say he had a genius of a religious imagination. And he started talking about this idea that Mormonism is quintessentially an American religion and is the only religion that has grown up fully on American soil. And I purposefully discount Scientology. forever. So it is associated, in my mind at least, with you know, the growth of American democracy and individuation and all that. And it's a very kind of, you know, it's Christian, but it's super fringe when you get into the details of it, because, well, first of all, you have polygamy, and then you have this thing called blood atonement, which I found in my research, which is kind of a religious capital punishment. And what most people don't know, what I learned when I started researching this project, was that in the late 19th century, when Utah was petitioning for statehood, and Utah was heavily Mormon, the United States federal government did not want to admit a theocratic state into its union and had to be assured by Brigham Young that such cult practices as polygamy and blood atonement, which was a capital punishment, were not going to be practiced in this state of the Union if they were admitted. And that's when the institution of Mormon institution started downplaying the notion of polygamy and obviously blood atonement. So I find that fascinating. Anyway, back to Bloom, he would say that, you know, it's in the name of the religion. They're the Church of Latter-day Saints. So there's something very hopeful and very present day about them. If you think about European Christianity, as I thought of it, it was very backwards looking. We're looking 2,000 years ago at the last miracle. You know, we're still naming saints, but we haven't seen a miracle for a while. So I just thought, well, this is an American story of Mormonism and of this character who converts to Mormonism because of its currency, its idea that we didn't come on the scene too late. We didn't come on in the time after miracles were over. We're in the best time now. And it's a very kind of American way of thinking, like we're in the best country, we're in the best time, we're the best people.
Exceptionalism. Yeah.
Exactly.
Right. You're talking about Bronson Powers, this ex-stuntman who is kind of the center of this book, who then goes out to like, you know, outside of Joshua Tree to kind of make this life for himself and his family. By the way, we're talking to David Duchovny. His new book is Truly Like Lightning. This is the Livewire House Party. I often hear people interviewing you saying, a lot of people don't know David Duchovny, but you went to Yale and Princeton. And I always think, everyone knows that. It gets brought up in every single interview you do. Like, is that something that is exasperating to you, or is that something that you're proud of, your pedigree educationally?
Oh, it's exasperating because it's not a dirty secret. You know, it's like, oh, man, right. I was like whispered. In fact, although it kind of was a dirty secret, when I first started acting, I was advised not to bring up the fact that I'd gone to an Ivy League school in auditions. Not that I walked in and say, hello from Princeton, everyone. My name is David Duchovny. But that it was somehow, you know, a strike against an actor that he would have... Or it was more like, well, why is he acting? You know, why, there's something wrong with him, you know? So I guess it became kind of like just a way to hang your hat on something about me that I went to these schools. I'm not ashamed of it, obviously. And I'm not overly like proud of it either. What I am proud of is that I got I read a lot at those schools, you know, starting in high school, really. I read and read and read, and I majored in English, and then I went to graduate school in literature, and I value that education, you know. To me, that's an education of a soul. It's an and a mind. So I feel very lucky to have been able to avail myself of all that.
It's interesting because Powers in the book is this autodidact.
Yeah.
I would think that would be a little bit of a leap as a writer to try to like embody that perspective of this sort of self-taught person. What was your approach?
You know, I was caught by that book, Educated by Tara Westover, you know. And
I got
strong vibrations
of
that book off of this book,
totally.
David.
Totally.
And I've often thought about people who educate themselves and... Or people who have been raised, you know, kind of off the grid. And I just thought, well, you know, Powers can love what I love. And he can kind of, he can love those works. And he can be drawn to kind of revolutionary thinkers. And like William Blake, who I love. And, you know, I don't think people really read anymore, but it is current. I mean, he's an 18th century poet. And he's as current as today. I thought I could kind of write about what it's like to read those things for the first time at the age when you're ready to get them. One of the amazing things for me is, you know, I've had a great education, but you get exposed to stuff really early. Like, you know, you're reading Shakespeare at 10 and 11 and 12, and it's like, you know, what are you getting? Mm-hmm. You're not getting... And to imagine like the first time at the age of whatever he is, 50 something, reading Blake and stuff like that, it was fun for me to come to it then.
This is Livewire. We're talking to David Duchovny. His new book is Truly Like Lightning. As somebody who's been writing for most of your adult life and also has been an actor, is it hard for you as an actor to not want to change dialogue that is written for you or tweak it if it feels like it's not great?
It's a very good question because it's something that is vital in my process or whatever you want to call it. But I think early on, before I had any like skills to speak of, I would want to change dialogue more. And then I realized, you know, that's a weakness, and that the strength would be to try to make this stuff work the way it's written. There's a reason. And I think I used to give up on it too soon and say, well, I'm going to just change this around. You know, make it better in my mind, rather than sitting with it, struggling with it, and going, oh, I'm going to find the reason that's not readily apparent to me that this is the way this is, and I'm going to make it, I'm going to be in service of that writer and director, and I'm going to try to make it work in this other way, rather than just throwing that out and saying I'm going to do it my way. The other part of that is, you know, as an actor, you learn... that it's not about the words. This is not something that a lot of people like think about if they're not actors. But one of the first things I learned was it has nothing to do with the words. It's what's underneath the words.
Did you find that happening even with the X-Files?
It's tough on the X-Files. I wouldn't rewrite that because there was a speed. And in fact, like I think about the two, Californication and X-Files, both those characters had to speak quickly. They're both very intelligent and articulate. And I didn't want to rewrite, certainly didn't want to improvise. And if I rewrote, it was unconsciously because I'm not great at memorizing word for word. Mm. Like Aaron,
really?
Aaron Sorkin would not want to work with me at all.
The thing about the character Mulder on The X-Files is he's a conspiracy theorist, and we're in a moment in our country where conspiracy theories are doing real damage.
Yeah.
Like, he would probably be into QAnon, right?
You know, I've thought about this. Yeah. You know, and it's a deep thought for me to be having, you know, when I'm thinking, oh, my God, am I somehow complicit here? But I don't think he'd be into QAnon because I think he was into actually finding out the truth and not perpetrating ridiculous, easily unprovable falsehoods, you know. So he was definitely one man railing against a deep state as well. You know, and this whole notion of a deep state, which has been so dangerous and pernicious the last few years, like people trying to destroy it. And my personal view was always, yeah, there's a deep state. It's called the bureaucracy of the United States government, and it's not political, you know, and that's the great thing about it. It doesn't have any kind of a bent. It's filled with professionals who do the job no matter who the president is.
Now, this is your fourth novel, and you've been working in film and TV for decades. Are you doing the two at the same time, or do you have to separate?
Oh, well, a novel like this, I have to separate. I have to commit on a daily basis to thinking and kind of just being in that zone, because I write fairly quickly. The only time I've written while I was acting was when I did... when I was on The X-Files, and Chris Carter said, if you write one, you can direct one. So I was like, okay, I'm going to write them.
Huh.
And then I was doing the show while I was trying to write those ideas. But I can't do that. No, I couldn't do that with this. It's more like when I get like a chunk of time and I have some ideas backed up, I try to figure out what idea is a novel. It's not. I don't always know what's a novel and what's just an idea, you know, something to talk about.
Yeah. Right.
And then I go fast and I go hard. And then, you know, just takes me, the first pass will just take me a few months. And then, you know, then there's a bunch of stuff afterwards that takes like a year and more. But, you know, if I'm acting's more of a 9-to-5 job. It's more of like, even if you didn't work hard that day, you're tired at the end of the day, and you just want, you know, to relax and, you know, put on some dumb TV and go to sleep. So it's kind of like not conducive to coming home at 6 p.m. or whatever and saying, okay, I'm going to put 4 hours of writing in. I can't do that.
What are you hoping people take away from this new book of yours?
That I went to Princeton and Yale.
Ah, great. Yeah.
Duly noted. We'll mention it twice in the intro.
I think, I sold it to develop into a show at Showtime. So I'm hoping to make it as, I'm hoping to play Bronson Powers, actually.
Oh, really?
Yeah. You know, I really, when I started writing it, I wanted to write like a biblical tragedy, like an epic tragedy, but I also wanted to write a comedy. And I was like, how do I do that? Like the middle part of the book is this fish out of water, innocents raised like wolves in the desert who now go to Rancho Cucamonga High and have to navigate the world of phones. So I was like, I want to say that, but I also want to say, what's it like to try to live like the Bible says, or what's it like to try to live by biblical law? Because, you know, our cultural customs change. So much has changed in the past 4 or 5 years, you know, just from Me Too to Black Lives Matter, there's been a revolution in the way we think of cultural norms, cultural fairness, cultural justice. So what if you bring into that mix a guy whose ideas of norms was formed 2,000 years ago, or even by a guy named Joseph Smith 150, 200 years ago? And how do I make him legitimate? I mean, I'm not saying I don't want you to believe what he believes. I don't. But how do you capture the emotional journey of someone who believes in something that is possibly crazy, you know, possibly insane? So I wanted to get inside him and make him understandable. I guess that's what I'd want to come away with, that these conversations that we're having, they're so complicated and so deep. It took me 450 pages to try to... What I find, you know, that question is great, but what I find so difficult is it's so hard to have these conversations quickly, you know? And so, yeah. So this book, this fat book, I mean, I'm amazed at it. I mean, I can barely lift it up.
Yeah, it's hefty. Yeah. I've got it right here.
Good for definitely. Bicep curls.
So that's yeah. That's like, instead of me trying to give a soundbite about what I feel about what's going on, or, you know, what do you think of Trump, or what do you think of Me Too, what do you think of Black Lives Matter? It's not about any of that, but it's about culture. It's about America. It's really, I want to write a book about America, I guess, and that's what I tried to do.
David Duchovny's latest book is Truly Like Lightning. David Duchovny, thanks for coming on the LiveWire House Party.
Thank you. It was a good party. I'm sorry that I was talking so much.
No, that's why we invited you over, man. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
That was David Duchovny right here on the LiveWire House Party. His newest novel is Truly Like Lightning. All right, our musical guest this hour is someone we think you are going to be hearing about a lot in the very near future. She describes her songs as being about mental illness, being brown, fearing adulthood, and falling in love with every boy who's ever been nice to me. She was named one of NPR's 2021 Artists to Watch, even though she only has 4 or 5 songs bouncing around the internet. That's how memorable they are. Let's welcome Jensen McCrae to the LiveWire House Party.
Thank you for having me. I'm happy to be here.
I have been doing some research on you, and you strike me as a person who has been extremely focused on your music for most of your life. Do you remember the first song that you wrote?
I do remember the first song I wrote. I was 7 years old, and it was an incomplete song called Making Messes. I had just learned Avril Lavigne's song, I think it's called Take Me Away, and I used the exact same chords. And it was just making messes, hearing things I don't want to hear. And that was the whole song.
Nice.
I was like, I'm a genius. I'm a visionary. Yeah.
And you did a program through the University of Southern California that was sort of a really intense, it sounds like, music writing program. Has that changed your relationship with songwriting compared to maybe some friends of yours, people who kind of pick up an instrument and are just kind of riffing?
Yeah, I think it definitely did. I mean, the program that it was very much a vocational school. That was how they talked about it. And I think especially in the first couple of years, I had this moment of becoming sort of disenchanted with songwriting because I was really seeing how the sausage gets made in a way mm-hmm. that was like, it was very demystifying and it made me less interested in it. And it was in terms of from a passion standpoint, and I was more mechanical about it. But the thing about learning the rules is that once you really learn them, you can start breaking them and start appreciating the beauty in them. And I started to understand much more cogently, like why my songs that I liked worked and why the ones mm-hmm. that I didn't like didn't work. And it made it much faster and more seamless for me to write things that I genuinely liked in the future. And it made it easier for me to express myself, which is really the whole point of it anyway.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. We got to take a quick break, but we will be back in just a minute with some music from Jensen McCrae. And you do not want to miss this. So don't go anywhere. This is the LiveWire House Party. LiveWire is thrilled to be partnering with Portland's own Portal Tea this season. Formerly known as Tea Chai Tay, Portal Tea is the premier tea company in the Pacific Northwest. They make one-of-a-kind, handcrafted tea blends like cinnamon churro chai and blueberry cream Earl Grey.
Use the code LIVEWIRE, all lowercase, for 20% off at portalt.co. Welcome back to the LiveWire House Party. I'm Luke Burbank, here with Elena Passarello, and we are talking to Jensen McCray. Jensen, I understand that because you're a Black woman, people would often miscategorize your music as being soul, or some category of music that isn't really what you play. Have you been able to sort of get past that, or is that still something that's happening to you?
It definitely still happens a little bit. And I often notice that when I get comparisons to white artists in my genre, they'll say, you sound like XYZ, but with more soul, which sort of to me just sounds like you're the Black version of this person.
Right.
And so it's happening less now, I think, as I put out more music and people who are finding my music are already acquainted with sort of who I am as an artist. But it's definitely still a thing that happens. I don't take particular offense to it, but it's just wrong because I don't really make R&B at all.
Yeah. How do you describe the sort of genre that you work in? Is it folk?
Yeah. I mean, sort of the thing that I've settled on is like folk alternative pop, because I'm like very influenced by pop music as well. But definitely like a folk sensibility, because it often starts with an acoustic guitar and a story, which is kind of the whole rock bed of folk music.
So I've heard three songs of yours that have been sort of released out into the world, and they're all really fascinating, really beautiful songs that are about really serious topics, you know, race, gender violence, COVID.
Yeah.
Is that something that just feels for you like what you have to write about right now because of where you are at in the world and what's going on?
I think, yeah, I would say yes, because I feel like I have to sort of write about everything that I think about. And so it ends up being, it runs the gamut from like the mundane and the arguably stupid to the sublime. And so I feel like it's not always that like the most profound topics generate the best songs, but I do feel sort of an obligation to broach those topics, even though they're not the easiest things to talk about, because they are on my mind. And I describe myself as a word girl. I also call myself a hypergraph because I literally can't stop writing all the time. And so it comes out that way. Like in some time, and it just so happens that the songs that have been released have been the ones that are sort of the most intense.
So you're going to play a song called Wolves for us, which I understand kind of grew out of a conversation that you were having with a producer.
Yeah, I started writing the guitar part, and I was writing other lyrics on top of it. I honestly can't even remember what they were, but they were not particularly inspired. And he was like, I really like the guitar part. I feel like we can do better on the lyrics. And I was like, well, what should I write about today? And he started talking about the R. Kelly documentary, about how it prompted a discussion with him and his male friends about how they didn't realize how much women went through on a daily basis just to feel safe and just to sort of gird themselves from the amount of potential violence that loomed in the world at large. And I started to think about just every experience I've ever had in my life where I was either in danger or felt like I was maybe in danger. And it came out pretty quickly and seamlessly. And I was talking to a friend about this the other day, actually, about how when I write things with immediacy, they're very straightforward and there's not very much metaphor. But writing something like this, which was very reflective, it was easy to cloak it in this narrative device because I had so much distance from the events that I was discussing.
All right, this is Jensen McCray here on the LiveWire House Party.
I was 15, still in the valley, walking in a parking garage. First time I met a wolf in person. At first I thought it was a dog. Tried to dodge him, he was faster than I'd ever had to be. He smiled and howled in the same moment and knocked the wind right out of me. Though I got away, I never walked the same. Smile and show no interest. Now I carry myself a little different. Now I avoid the woods. Now I know the rules. 19, still fun at parties. He plied me with shot after shot. He assured me he was harmless. Why did I ever trust a fox? I ignored all of my teachings. How I survived, I can't believe. I almost let him get his claws in. Still knocks the wind right out of me.
That was the immensely talented Jensen McCrae right here on the LiveWire House Party. You can check out her social media at Jensen McCrae. All right, before we get out of here, a little preview of next week's show. We're going to be talking to TV writer Danielle Henderson. She may be best known as the creator of the feminist Ryan Gosling blog and meme from a few years ago. She's going to stop by to talk to us about her memoir, which is also amazing, The Ugly Cry. We're also going to hear some poetry from Kaveh Akbar and music from Deep Sea Diver. So do not miss next week's LiveWire. This week's LiveWire, well, it's just about wrapped up. A huge thanks to our guests, though, David Duchovny, Nick and Kaylee Woodard, and Jensen McCrae. LiveWire is brought to you in part by Alaska Airlines.
Laura Haddon is our executive producer. Heather D. Michelle is our executive director. Tim Harkins is our production director. Our producer and editor is Melanie Sevchenko. Our assistant editor is Trey Hester. And Stephanie Moore is our social media manager. A. Walker Spring composes our music. Molly Pettit is our technical director and mixer. And our house sound is by D. Neil Blake.
Additional funding provided by the Oregon Cultural Trust and the James F. and Marion L. Miller Foundation. LiveWire was created by Robin Tenenbaum and Kate Sokoloff. This week, we'd like to thank members Ed and Ann Galen of Portland, Oregon. For more information about the show or how you can listen to our podcast, head on over to livewireradio.org. I'm Luke Burbank for Elena Passarello and the whole LiveWire crew. Thanks for listening, and we will see you next week. Dear LiveWire, when we first met, I was really shy. I had no idea we'd spend so much time together or that you'd be one to fill my heart with joy and make me want to be a better person. Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't know you were here. I was busy reading a review from one of our many, many rapturously smitten listeners. Oh, wait, actually, no, sorry, this is from Elena. Anyway, the point is, it would be really helpful if you wanted to leave us a review feel free to say really nice things about us, and we'll even read them now and then on the show. So you might hear your review of LiveWire read on the program itself. Reviews help other people hear about the show, and then we can keep doing this for a long, long time because we love having this job. Thank you so much. If you've left a review, and if you're about to leave a review, you can go ahead and do it right where you get the podcast.
From PRX.